So Sarah McAnulty recently earned her PhD, and she's now an assistant research professor in molecular and cell biology who studies squid. Her Skype a Scientist project has been covered in our own UConn magazine and across national media outlets, and she was widely quoted in the press a few months ago when Apple released an anatomically incorrect squid emoji. We talk about that in the interview. And so, as I mentioned, she came to our studio long before social distancing was put in place, so some of her talk about gatherings at local bars, it was long before all this. But she's really fun and funny, and I had a great time talking to her, so check it out.
Yep, absolutely.
Why do you study squid?
So we study Hawaiian bobtail squid. This is in Spencer Nyholm's lab in molecular and cell biology. We work on these bobtail squid because we want to know how animals and bacteria communicate with one another. And so this squid has a specialized organ in it called the light organ. And that's basically like a little pouch with bacteria in it. And so the bacteria bioluminesce, so they create light. And then the squid is able to camouflage at night with moonlight coming down from above, being able to sense how much light is coming down from above and then use the bacterial light to match that light. And so a predator swimming below, looking up to find like little prey-shaped silhouettes, when the squid has the light to match the moonlight, the predators can't see them.
It's a
really cool symbiosis, and then it's really convenient for studying how animals and bacteria live beneficially because it just is one species of bacteria that live in this light organ. And if you compare that to like, you know, a mouse or a rabbit or these other model systems that you often think about in labs, they have maybe like 100 or more, sometimes 1,000 species of bacteria that live in them. So understanding communication between bacteria and an animal in those models is like listening to everybody talking at a party all at the same time with the music going. It's like really, really hard to figure out who's saying what and what it all means. But in a squid, you've got one-to-one. So if it's coming from bacteria, you know, oh, that's Vibrio fischeri talking. And if it's coming from a squid, you know it's the bobtail squid. So cool. It just makes things easier for us as scientists.
So what kinds of things, I don't know, recently or throughout your studies have you discovered, or what are some of the big findings that you've made?
Yeah, so we haven't published my like big findings yet, but broad brushstrokes, like we were looking at how immune cells of squid, which are like the white blood cells that you have in humans, how they can tell the difference between the beneficial bacteria and everybody else. Because the squid needs to be really good at knowing who belongs in that light organ and who needs to be eliminated because it's sort of open to the seawater. We don't really think, though, that any other bacteria gets in there. And so we wanted to see if the immune system plays some sort of role here. And so I was basically learning how the immune cells read bacteria, sort of, to determine, okay, who do I have here? Should I destroy it? Should I let it go? What do we do?
Cool.
And so that was what I worked on.
The thing that you have been very busy with and gotten lots of attention for is Skype a Scientist, which is the coolest project ever. Tell me what that is and why you started it.
Yeah, absolutely. So Skype a Scientist is a nonprofit that I started in 2017. The main project that we do is matching scientists with classrooms and other groups all around the world for Q&A sessions with scientists about what a scientist does and generally what they know a lot about. So it's specifically designed as a Q&A and not as like a scientist giving a lecture, because we want people to feel like they've really gotten the chance to meet a scientist and not just get lectured at by one. Because there's plenty of opportunities to hear lectures by scientists online, but we want to form personal connections. Because we've noticed, you know, in the last 10, 15 years, there's sort of this growing mistrust of science, right? You've got people doing juice cleanses instead of just, you know, eating fruits and vegetables and everything, you know, and then we've got people not vaccinating their children. And so I think as scientists, we need to build trust up with people. And I think a lot of times the first step there is just getting a chance to get FaceTime with scientists and realize that we're real people and not how we're depicted in movies and TV, which is like socially awkward, sometimes evil, crazy haired white guys. It's not great, you know. So we're trying to break that sort of
perception. Specifically with children.
Yeah, so we mostly work with children in the matching. So the Q&A sessions are usually with kids online. But we also do events at bars. Just last night, we were in Manchester, Connecticut at Labyrinth Brewing. We had like a science trivia night. And sometimes we have like more game nights where not games like board games, games like you get up and move and you're throwing balls. And it's all you learn about science while just getting together with your friends and playing like silly games while drinking a beer. And we also sometimes go to like science festivals and yeah, that kind of thing. Scientists are normal people that just really, really like one specific thing and got really deep into that thing, you know? Like we're not socially awkward most of the time.
Yeah. Kids seeing this through the Skype sessions has to be eye-opening to them about what's available for them as well.
Absolutely. And so when teachers sign up for this program too, they can tell us if over half of their classroom is a given underrepresented group in STEM, and then we'll match them with a scientist from the same group, which we think is super helpful too. And as a side note, we're starting to do public art. So
I just saw this on your Twitter, your crowdfunding.
Yeah.
So cool.
I'm super excited about this. So we are crowdfunding to do over time three cities with three artists, three sets of scientists. So the first one we're doing is going to be in Philadelphia. It's going to be in North Philly. And we have three scientists who grew up in North Philly that we're going to paint onto a mural. It's going to be great. We got funded in like 2 days.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And so
cool.
The artist is a cancer biologist in Philly. And then we've got three wildlife biologists that we're going to put up there. They grew up in the neighborhood, which
that was
is just
a really interesting part.
It's just great. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the next one we're doing is going to be Native Alaskans in Alaska.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, we'll have a Native scientist Native scientist and a Native artist. And we just need to get the funding to get everybody able to do it. And then we're also going to look at maybe Miami as number three.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I think it's so great that you study squid because that's something that's kind of like attention grabbing anyway. And then
yeah.
You have this passion for science communication and getting science out there. And it's like, it helps that you,
yeah.
You have
working
this.
On the cutest possible squid
right?
definitely
and the
helps.
Recent emoji thing was really
oh,
interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you were a big voice in that with the biologically incorrect.
Yeah, they put a squid's
incorrect.
Butt on a squid's forehead. And
and you got quoted everywhere.
I got quoted on that a lot. Yep, I was like, I'm sorry to anybody who's professionally mentored me. This is like, what's the headline is squid's butt on forehead says UConn scientist. I'm like, oops.
Hey, gets us out there, right?
Yep.
Whatever works. How did science communication become something that you're so passionate about?
Okay, so my first year of grad school, I was in the Nyholm lab, and we didn't have a ton of money at the time. A lot of times labs will go through brief periods of not having a grant, totally normal. And I basically just wanted to get my project up and running. And so I was like, I wonder if crowdfunding would work for science. And so this was 2014. It was right after my first year wrapped up. And so my lab mate, Andrea Surya, who's now a postdoc at UNC Chapel Hill, we just started a crowdfunding thing all about the bobtail squid. And we thought, let's just raise $1,000 so basically we can, you know, buy shrimp to feed the squid, just like keep the lights on, you know? And quickly it just took off. Like we raised $5,000 in a pretty short period of time. And this was before I had people really listening to me at all, which was great. And so anyway, while I was doing that, I thought I was doing it like just to get money for science so I could do science. And in the process, I realized I was having as much fun communicating science as I was doing the science. And I was like, I love both, but this is just more fun than I had anticipated. So I kept doing it because it's kind of nice to have a balance of stuff that you're doing. So I would do, you know, the hard thinking science during the day and then do some science communication sitting on my couch at night. And it just sort of grew from there. And then in 2017, there was just a lot of anxiety in the science community. There was a lot of, you know, turnover in our country, and everyone was sort of not super confident about how everything was going to go, basically. And so there were all these scientists just anxiety spiraling on Twitter. And I was like, we need to take this energy and funnel it towards something useful instead of just screaming into the void. And so that's when I started Skype a Scientist, because I figured, you know, let's give them something to do. They'll feel better and we'll do something good with it. And so from there, Skype a Scientist has grown into a huge organization. And here we are.
And you mentioned Twitter, which you're very good at, Sarah Mac Attack.
Yep.
that must be great to have that kind of tool today.
It's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Having that amount of reach is great. Although I sometimes am like, when I'm tweeting some like supremely stupid thing as I'm like scrolling through Twitter at night on the couch, I'm like, Are you sure you want to tweet that stupid
that
thing?
Many
like,
people,
you have 40,000 people reading your like shower thoughts right now. You know, and I'm like, whatever. I try not to think about it because then
it
I won't
helps
say
with
anything.
That personality for the science communication thing, it humanizes
essential.
You.
Totally. Yeah. I want people to feel really comfortable asking whatever question they want, even if they think like maybe I should know that. So oftentimes, like this morning, I just yesterday was at Mansfield Hollow flipping logs, looking at centipedes. I don't know the first thing about centipedes. Like, I know a lot about squid. I know a lot about a lot of other ocean invertebrates. But when it comes to forest invertebrates, I know nothing, really. I know this the same as anybody who's watched the Discovery Channel. And so, but I took a picture of one where you saw what looked like big mandibles on either side of its face. And so I just tweeted, like, basically, what the hell is this? Like, what is going on here? To show, you know, even though I know a lot about one thing, it doesn't mean I know a lot about everything. Mm-hmm. Scientists aren't super geniuses that know everything about everything. We just know about whatever the thing is that we specialize in. So I want people to feel like it's a safe space for asking stupid questions.
That's great. What's next for you? What's coming up?
Yeah, so the mural projects are taking a lot of my time right now, and I'm super excited about that. We basically just need to raise money between now and the summertime when it's actually nice enough outside to put paint on a wall. I've been giving talks sort of all over the country on science communication, getting scientists kind of feeling empowered to start doing it if they've never done it before. We're working on science communication training for our scientists that'll be free and available online for anybody to do. Basic program maintenance isn't exciting, but it is a thing that I do a lot of the time. And so, yeah, that's the main stuff.
Very cool. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
And if you're interested, you can learn about Skype a Scientist at skypeascientist.com, on Twitter at Skype Scientist, because much like UConn 360, Skype a Scientist was taken. And teachers who are interested in the program can browse photos and bios of participating scientists at instagram.com/skypeascientist. And I noticed during quarantine and social distancing, distance learning they're calling it? Sarah was on Twitter connecting parents with some of the scientists to video chat with their kids while they were at home, which was really cool. She is really fun to follow on social media, and she is at Sarah Mack Attack, which is SarahMack Attack on Twitter, Instagram, and even TikTok.
TikTok. Mm-hmm. That's the new frontier.
Yeah, I love TikTok so much.
I haven't dipped into that one yet. I'm a little afraid.
I'm still avoiding Facebook.
Well,
I'm going to send props out to Julie. I sent you a 5-star note yesterday.
I saw that. That was very nice. Thank you, Ken. Boosted my spirits.
This is the kind of thing podcasts can do that we can't do in print.
Yes.
Because her enthusiasm jumps out of the recording.
That's very props to Sarah for being awesome.